heart
anymore. Well, it's another week, and that means another show between Sundays here on Joy 620. And I'm joined, as always, by good friend and pastor Jason Hayes of Shoreline Church. Jason,
hey.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are
good,
you?
Good. I'm good. You know, since we spoke last, which we only speak once
a
week.
That's exactly for 1 hour a week. In fact, it's good to hear your voice.
It is. It is so good to see you once a week again. That's a joke, folks. We speak more. We speak at least twice a week.
Yes, absolutely.
And so since we spoke last, the summer is really about over. Your kids are starting. My kids starting school. I got two kids now in school.
It seems like two rather large things have happened in the last week in the Wood household. Okay. And so number one, I noticed that you all had made a field trip to Mayfield.
We did. You know, I grew up on a dairy farm. So, Mayfield dairy always had had a place in our heart because that's the way food was put on our table was my dad milked cows and still milks cows to this day. And so, we went yesterday and toured the facility. My kids got to milk a fake cow.
Nice.
And that was impressive.
Every kid's dream.
They enjoyed
maybe,
that.
I don't know.
They enjoyed that. And so yes, it was a good time.
So do you get
good
samples time. At Mayfield?
Not that they are not a sponsor of the show, but,
no.
But you go on the tour. It's, very reasonably priced.
Right.
You go on a tour of the factory of them, how they're making the cartons and filling the cartons with milk,
right,
and making the ice cream. And then you get, they say a scoop of ice cream, but it was a lot more than that.
It was generous scoop.
And an ice cream cone, and the kids loved it, and it was good.
So that's big news.
That was big news.
But even bigger news that our audience cannot observe right now, but the Andrew Wood glorious beard that
is gone.
Is no longer.
It's gone.
What happened, man?
Well, a lot of things happen that, you know, my wife was never a huge fan of the big beard.
And that's enough.
And
right there.
My daughter, not a huge fan. My son was a huge fan. But we decided over the weekend to trim it. And that trimming has continued about every single day.
I've seen a progression over the last few days.
Yeah.
Have you lost any superpowers?
Not that I'm aware of yet.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of yet. But it's... you could argue I've lost years. It looks like I'm not as old
like
as I was.
You do look like a young lad today.
Yeah, so.
Well done. Well, we are back in school. Things are rocking and rolling, man. My kids my two younger start tomorrow, and then my oldest, who goes to Christian Academy in Knoxville, he will be starting on Monday. Hard to believe.
It's crazy.
Yeah, man.
They got to learn, though.
I guess so. We're trying to teach them ourselves some, but I guess we can have some folks come along.
I would totally do homeschool if it was just home,
right,
and not the school part.
Right. Very good at the home part.
And they just stayed home, and then we didn't have to like sit down and do lessons,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
That really sounds up my alley.
Yeah. If you, what's the show? Smarter than a fifth grader, or whatever. Without question, as a parent of a now sixth grader, my son is definitely smarter than me when it comes to things like math. Reading, probably not history, but when it comes to math and science, no doubt.
Yeah, probably not being a dad. He's probably not smarter at that. But school's an interesting thing. The kids were excited to go, and our second child is starting kindergarten, so she's really, really excited.
Love
about
it,
that.
Man. So, all right, so it's been kind of a wild week in news, especially related to the church.
Yeah.
What are we going to get into today?
So today what we want to talk about is a touchy subject, I guess, but if you are in the evangelical world, if you attend church, regardless really of your denomination, you have seen over the last few years, in particular in the last few months, and if you're reading the New York Times in the last few days, you're seeing some churches – mega churches see their pastors kind of have a fall from grace,
right.
And not a soft fall, but a really hard one. And you're seeing elders and deacons and committees and lay people all trying to figure out what we need to do to correct it. And my concern with the quickly seeking to correct things is the gospel at times gets lost, and
right.
So we go into into PR mode. How can we make the church look better? How can we make this particular church look better during all of this mess? Instead of getting on our faces and saying, look, we have an issue, and this was a problem that needs to be addressed. What I think we're going to talk about today is how to walk through that, not just as leadership, but how to walk through that as lay people that are just going to church, involved in your church, and seeing these pastors that we hold up in high regard falling. And what we have to also recognize is this is not just from the mega churches.
Right.
This is happening in rural community churches and in churches all across the country.
Right. And I appreciate, we were talking a bit off the air, I appreciate your thoughts even as it relates to the expression celebrity pastor.
Sure.
You know, we often think about a celebrity pastor as the person who does make the headlines, who is pastoring the huge church and the big metropolitan cities and things of that sort, and again makes the national news when they have a failure of some sort. And yet, we also know even in our smallest of towns, the possibility exists for our local pastors and church leaderships to be somewhat turned into celebrities. And so we have to really, really be mindful of that. But we also have to be really, really aware that inevitably, unfortunately, in a fallen world, there will be leaders that are connected to churches that will fall. And we have to figure out what we do with it as the church. We can either say, I don't want to be connected to the church because I don't want to be associated with those headlines. And I'm not just talking about connected to a specific local congregation.
Sure.
I'm talking about we may say, hey, listen, I'm for Jesus, but I'm not for his church. Unfortunately, as you and I both know, that's not a possibility. Some people may say that, and that may be a decision they've chosen to make, but you can't be for Jesus and not be for his church. And so, if the church sometimes is ugly, if the church sometimes makes mistakes and the leaders connected to the church sometimes make mistakes, what are we supposed to do with it? And what are we the ones that are reading the headlines? And what are we the ones that are leading some of our local congregations like myself? What are we supposed to do with it? And so that's where we're at today.
Yeah, and as we look at that, I think we first address that, look, the folks that have fallen – the pastors, the leadership in some of these churches that have made mistakes, pastors aren't exempt from temptation.
Right.
They're not exempt from the same temptations in their marriage, the same temptations with leadership and being demanding and kind of like a dictator. And we've seen that with pastors before too, who have fallen, but not because of a sexual sin, but because they were what we found out. In from a lot of people talking about it was, look, they were just a terrible, almost like a terrible human being. They just weren't really nice to people,
right,
and were hateful. And it gets back to we lose sight of the gospel at times,
mm-hmm,
and we start believing our own hype. Well, I am the leader of this place,
right,
and I am making a difference, and I am doing this. And we start believing that, and then we find ourselves, and you've heard some pastors say, my only guilt is from putting myself in poor situations. Well, that's not the only guilt.
No, yeah.
And that's a cop out at times of, well, I shouldn't have been at that dinner with that person, or that person shouldn't have been in my hotel room. Yes, they shouldn't have been in your hotel room, but it should have never even got to that point.
Yeah, I know for me, you know, as Andrew alluded, and what we have zero interest today in doing is throwing anybody under the bus.
Sure.
We have zero interest in calling more attention to controversies and things that are happening, whether it's connected to denominations, whether it's connected to a specific local church. I mean, you can look at headlines, you know, pick up the Chicago Tribune, look at the New York,
yeah,
Times. You can find those type of things. And sadly, you can also at times just go down the street to your local coffee shop and hear some stuff. So our goal is not to throw anyone under the bus. What we do need to recognize, though, is that there is a possibility that there are certain things in place that are conducive to those type of results and those type of things happening. Now, as you said, one of those starts with the idea that somehow these leaders have greater access to God,
mm-hmm,
and somehow they're greater loved by God, and somehow the beauty of the local church is now turned into a corporation or some type of business. And so I love the eldership that we have at our church. They are godly men that I am abundantly grateful for. And I'm always grateful that when I sit down with them at times and we have to talk about a situation where someone has fallen, whether it's, you know, a husband or it's a wife or it's someone in their business practices or whatever it may be, I'm always grateful that one of those men will inevitably say, hey, let's just stop here. And let's fight our temptation of the flesh to immediately say, this couldn't have been us, mm-hmm. because it could have been us. Now, do we try, even the idea of eldership, do we try to put things in place that we protect ourselves from the flesh? Absolutely. But one of the things I constantly tell our people is that, hey, listen, I don't have greater access to God than you do. You can hear from the voice of God. You can open up the Word of God. You can seek Him in prayer. You can do those things just as effectively as I can. And so, if it's true that we can have just as much communication with God, if the layperson and the clergy, for lack of a better description, have equal access, then we can also assume they have equal temptation. Mm.
Yeah.
And so the same temptations that any other person has, they are at least there in the role of ministry and maybe even more elevated because some of the pressures that come with it.
Well, and also understanding that leadership needs to recognize that. So at times we can become, we become a church partner, a church member that is constantly looking for a pastor to fall, and that makes it very difficult, or looking for their children to fall, and that makes it difficult on the children. Or we become a congregation that's just aloof and don't really care, and we just want to hear a good sermon and then leave.
Right.
And so both of those things are bad. We do need to be paying attention to what's going on, and the pastor needs to be paying attention as well. We all have a role in the work of the gospel, and we want to see the gospel move. And if we're having these big blind spots, the gospel is going to be hindered, and that's not a good thing. And so the Lord is using leaders and lay people to move the gospel. How are we seeking to see the gospel move while also understanding that boundaries are important?
Right.
And so there's nothing wrong with the Billy Graham rule that he said, you know, he wouldn't have meetings with females because he didn't want to be tempted or for that female to be tempted. And some people look at that and go, oh, Billy just thought that, or Reverend Graham, I guess I should call him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure you get permission.
Yeah,
to call
probably
him
not.
Him,
so. But as we talk about celebrity pastors,
yeah.
But Reverend Graham would, it wasn't that he thought all women were going to jump his bones. It was,
right.
Look, we're just going to create boundaries, and there's nothing wrong with boundaries. He wanted to be respectful to his wife. He wanted to be respectful to the husbands of those that he was meeting with.
And I mean, I don't care to say it. You know, I've had this conversation with people. That's a practice that I put into
sure.
place. It's not that I don't trust them. It's that I don't trust me.
Sure.
I know the weaknesses of my flesh, and it's not that I'm going to immediately go and jump into some type of
right.
relationship or do something that's inappropriate. I just know how the enemy wants to even put a seed in my mm-hmm. heart that could be unhealthy. It could be dangerous. And so, again, we definitely want to say that when we look at the local church, what we are not talking about here is just an open door towards, hey, I can be critical of everything
right.
that happens in the life of the local church. That's not it. On the other hand, we don't need to remain silent when major things are happening in the midst of our churches. And sometimes that stuff just gets swept under the rug for far too long. And before you know it, it blows up, whether into a local scandal or some type of national scandal.
Well, and it's difficult to say something.
Right.
It's a lot easier to stay silent.
Right.
And when it includes the gospel and involves the gospel, we must speak out. And we'll be back.
And this is my desire. Would you burn me with your fire? I want to be like you. I want to be where you are. Is my desire, would you burn me with your fire? I want to be like you, I want to be where you are.
So as we discuss some issues that are very relevant to today's time and the church, and Jason, as we talk through not just the celebrity pastor culture, but
sure.
but pastors and leaders within the church, the global church, falling from grace. And it's not that it happens overnight. These
right.
are these are things that have slowly built up, whether it be sexual sin or alcohol sin and the overuse of alcohol or leadership qualities that show themselves to be anti-gospel. There's a number of different things, affairs, all kinds of things happen, but these don't happen overnight.
Right.
And so what are some things that being a pastor yourself and being a church member for a long time,
yeah.
what are some things that the folks could hear and go, okay, these may be some in my own life, not that we're just looking at the pastor, but in our own lives, what are some things that kind of pop out to say, hey, I may be going in a direction I don't need to go in.
Yeah, so in 20 years of ministry, I would say I can't even begin to put a number to the amount of people that I've counseled. And I'm not talking about pastors yet. I'm just talking about people in general and how many conversations I've had with folks that have found themselves in situations and circumstances that they never would have dreamt up and then they never had an intent to go towards. In other words, there's probably been on less than, you know, less than a handful of those conversations where I've walked away from meetings and thought, man, that guy is just really just a jerk. You know, like that guy's sure. just a terrible person, or she's just a really bad, evil person. In most cases, people ended up in a place that they don't want to be, doing things they wish they weren't, and never really paid attention to the trajectory that got them there. And so I think the same is true. I've talked to, unfortunately, too many pastors who said the same thing. And no one sets out in the life of kind of all of us, no one sets out to be a drug addict. No mm-hmm. one sets out to be, a sex addict. No one, you know, sets out to be a bad husband or a bad wife or a bad father or to be a cheat at work or any of those things. No one sets out to do those things. And in the same way, there are exceptions, but for the large majority of it, there are very, very, very few leaders who set out to say, hey, I want to set a church up that's going to be all about me. I want to set a church up that's going to set me in a situation that I'm going to have a moral failure. Hey, I want to get into a church that's going to allow me to have adulterous affairs. I want to get into a church that's going to allow me to steal from the people. This is not what most people set out to do. But just as we spoke about before the break, sometimes seeds are sown and those seeds eventually grow into something that's really, really, really unhealthy. And so what are some of those? You know, the scope is broad. I mean, certainly we see all kinds of sexual sin that is falling under the umbrella of the local church. And we know that's true in the midst of those that we're serving. And we also know that that happens in the midst of our staffs and our leadership and things of that sort. And that's why for us as a staff, for us personally, we put in significant boundaries. And I know we're going to talk about a little bit later about why or what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of those things. Hey, how careless am I when it comes to the things that I'm looking at? How careless am I when it comes to the conversations that I'm having? How careless am I when it comes to the touch that I'm having with someone? And again, a lot of those things, people aren't in their brain thinking, I'm going to get to that place. But unfortunately, one of the things that I've often said to even people when it relates to modesty, and that's for men and for women, you know, we may say, well, I can dress a certain way and bring attention to myself, but I would never go and have an affair with someone. Well, that may be true, but what happens to that person's heart? You know, that person has had things that have been stirred in their heart due to a lack of modesty, and then ultimately they're going to go and find some place to pursue those things of the flesh. And it may not be with the person that initially brought some degree of temptation. It might be into another channel, but that's where we're called to bring each other up. And so that's just one. What else would you say?
Yeah, I would say it starts with, if you are married and listening to this, it starts with your marriage. And so what is your idea of marriage? Is your idea of marriage a fairy tale that you see on TV, or is it realistic? And because if you don't have a good foundation, I've seen marriages fail before, because the parties involved would not let go of things that happened their senior year of high school. They had multiple children since, they are older, more mature. They're not 17. But because they couldn't let go of certain things, either parties went looking for someone that would make them feel better, or they just ended their marriage altogether. And so I think we have to be honest and look in the mirror and say, what are we making? What choices are we making every single day? I sat down with a guy the other day who is finding himself and his girlfriend, they're pregnant, and he's not really sure what to do. And I was walking him through love and relationships and being a dad and being a good boyfriend or a good husband, and it all seemed so foreign to him. And he was like, we fight all the time. And he said, with petty stuff, like things that don't even really matter. And I was like, do you think that changes when you get married? Because it doesn't. Like, at least not in the Woodhouse. There's still a lot of petty things that we get upset about.
We had that one. Carrie and I just had that one time.
Probably just that one time.
It was really mild over a petty thing, and she apologized.
yeah. And so as we have those conversations, are we willingly and honestly looking at our own lives and going, I am not strong enough.
Right.
To not look at that, or I'm not strong enough to do this, or I'm not strong enough to do that. I need to either have an accountability partner. I need to set boundaries. I need to have a discussion with my spouse, with my voice and anger, that immediately the Lord smacked me across the face and said, that is not godly leadership with your children.
So I think it's interesting. So I love how you're, you know, elevating that role of the spouse. Mm-hmm. And so there's something that speaks towards partnership, and I think that's the second deal that we have to. Mm-hmm. That's the second piece of the pie here. It's the second seed that we can begin to be worried if we see it. One is impurity, but then secondly is isolation.
Yep.
Too many guys, too many ladies are doing ministry in isolation from the rest of their family. They go and do their thing. They go and they have those meetings. They go and have those relationships. They go. And it's their thing. And one of the things I'm so grateful to God for is that our ministry, while certainly I'm the pastor, I understand that.
Sure.
And Carrie doesn't want to be the pastor. Yeah. She does not want to be the pastor, but she is intricately involved in the life of our ministry and our kids. They take ownership in our children's ministry. And so isolation is a problem. And so whether it's an isolation from your family, but maybe even, you know, to a different degree, isolation from eldership, from key leaders, if you begin to be a leader that sits alone on top of the mountaintop, you will inevitably fall off the mountain. Mm-hmm. And so that is why we have to say we don't just exist in relationship with God, but we have to exist, as he showed us, in God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, in community with people that are not yes men or yes women, but people that will hold us accountable and will protect us from the things of the flesh. And unfortunately, as we have seen too many of these stories and too many of these headlines, we've read all about or we've heard about where there has been an absence of accountability and sometimes really just even an absence of friendship and mm-hmm. relationships. And ministry can be a lonely, lonely place. And if we embrace that, and just stick with ourselves in isolation, then, man, we begin to listen to the voices in our mind, and those things are often not of the Spirit, and that leads us to a bad place.
Well, I think at times when you hear accountability, people think, well, I got to sit down with someone every week. But it could be just having someone in your life that says, you can't say that.
Correct.
What's going on in your heart that you would react that way?
Right.
Or You can't, you don't need to watch that or look at that or make that comment or about so-and-so. And a lot of these times, if you look and see where people have fallen, it's because no one felt like they had the freedom at any point in time to say, hey, pastor, mm-hmm. you probably shouldn't ask that person up to your hotel room at night.
Exactly. And it's not always just reactive. I mean, mm-hmm. we need those people in our life, too, that are going to say, hey, that's not wise. Hey, you can't say that. Or, hey, I'm not sure what you taught there is really scriptural. Or maybe there's some misunderstanding. We need those people that are reactive. But I tell you what we also need, and I think this is there's an absence of this in a lot of churches. We need people that are proactive, mm-hmm. that are saying, hey, I'm going to fight for your family. Like, hey, man, I'm going to ask you, when was the last time you took a Sunday off?
Right.
Hey, man, how come you're leaving vacation days unused? Hey, man, how come you're missing your kid's ball game yep. for this meeting. What's more important? Your kids are more important than this. And yeah. so, unfortunately, if we set our people up in those ways, inevitably they'll fall. And so we need leaders that are refuting isolation, and we need leaders that are embracing communication that says, hey, I'm going to speak to you when things go bad, but I'm also going to push you towards the things that are good.
And that's what the gospel does, is it creates gospel people that are willing to have those conversations with other gospel people. We'll be back.
Oh, there's hunger and there's strife, suffering comes to every life. Oh, the pain we bear makes it hard to sing. There's a song we've yet to hear, a melody that's ringing clear. Come and drink before ever satisfied.
That's good.
You know, I don't know if we should have a favorite song of Chuck's.
But that might
that
be.
That is my favorite. I may or may not, and this is complete honesty, and this may be weird for Chuck.
Give it to us.
It is, that may be my alarm clock song every morning.
Oh, man, should we? Wow, that is big news. I will go back to the
you
office
should.
And inform
and Chuck
him.
Will be like,
and he
keep Andrew away from me.
He will never talk to you
again. As you're talking about boundaries, keep Andrew Wood away from me. That is what I want to happen. But no, that is, Chuck's a blessed dude and talented and gifted. And I feel like we have to say that at least once a show.
And we actually have more music from Chuck that will make sure that we
yes,
get to these
man,
guys.
This is good.
Yeah,
this,
I love
that,
it.
That's a great song. So as we're talking about, we ended the last segment talking about some seeds that can kind of show themselves when it comes to looking and some red flags that will come up and go, okay, maybe I need to start making some corrections here.
Right.
What are some of those? You know, let's go with three. What are three seeds that we need to be?
Yeah, and I think the corrections are from. I think the things we're talking about keeping our eyes open. I think that's from two perspectives.
Sure.
One is if you're a leader and you see these things in your life, that's an indictment, and mm-hmm. and you need to immediately try to do some things to refute that. We're going to talk about that. But then also, if you're a layperson and you see these things in place, it doesn't mean immediately that you should naturally assume that they're out living a crazy life and full of debauchery and things of that sort, but it might not be a bad thing mm-hmm. to offer some encouragement or to offer some help just to point people back towards some things that are more healthy. And so thus far we've talked about impurity. So if you see a seed of impurity, we've talked about the seed of isolation. And third, I think you've got to talk about the seed of pride. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think isolation and pride can go together.
Yeah,
I think we isolate ourselves at times, especially in leadership, because there could be a part of you that's like, well, they don't understand what I'm going through.
Right.
They don't understand what it's like to lead this organization. They don't understand what it's like to lead this church, or if you're a CEO even of a for-profit, not even of a secular organization. Say you're a CEO of a secular organization, you could create isolation because, well, they don't understand what the decisions that I have to make.
I've been there. I've absolutely been there. You know, it's really easy for the enemy to kind of speak into your hair. They don't understand the things you deal with. They don't understand that phone calls are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And even the questions that, you know, inevitably I'll get, hey, so tell me what you do Monday through Friday,
yeah.
you know, and immediately their pride swells up mm-hmm. and you think people don't understand. They don't get it. And that is, there's a degree of truth to that. There's absolutely a degree of truth that until you've sat in those shoes, you do not mm-hmm. understand the weight and the pressure. Even for me, as someone who had served on church staff for many, many,
sure.
many years, I've begun to realize now 6+ years into this that the role of a senior pastor or lead pastor is even different. And so we can feel that way and maybe even be right in feeling that. But what we also have to be mindful of, all these other people,
mm-hmm.
they've got shoes that we're not sitting in.
Yep.
They've got challenges that we're not facing. And so let's not elevate ourselves as if we're some martyrs for the faith.
Yeah.
Let's realize that everyone has hardship. Everyone has unique circumstances. All kinds of people got a tough employer. All kinds of people got financial hardship. There's a lot of stuff that people are dealing with, and we don't need to elevate ourselves up above them.
Well, as we talk about that too, I just think back to where I grew up and went to a very traditional Southern Baptist church. We never invited the pastor to our house. And so there was a sense of, well, he wouldn't want to come to our house. And so we almost, as lay people, create isolation for the pastor because we say, well, they're the pastor.
Right.
they can't come out to dinner with us, and and they are just different than we are, and so they don't want to talk about football. They're not interested in some of the mundane things. But the reality is, because I've been on staff at a church, and now my role at Hope, I speak with a lot of pastors.
Right.
Actually, they're not that different than
yeah.
us, and so they want to have those conversations. I had lunch with a pastor the other day, and when we got done, he was like, "Well, you probably didn't want to talk about all that we talked about." And I said, "No, I could do this for hours."
Absolutely.
Because I understand
absolutely
that for a pastor at times it's hard to just talk about things that don't pertain to their actual church.
Well, and eventually what happens if we're not careful, we begin to believe the things that everyone else mm-hmm. believes about us, and we cannot fall into that trap, meaning that, hey, you know, people think, well, he doesn't have hardship or he doesn't ever have doubts or whatever that may be. No, we have to always stay grounded. We don't compare ourselves to others. We compare ourselves to the things of God. We look at the gospel as our plumb line, and we begin to go in there. In fact, we're doing a kitchen renovation, you know.
Yeah.
So we're basically camping in our house right now. So we have opened up walls. We have no appliances. And so on our back porch, we have a covered porch. On our back porch, we have a big table. It legitimately has a crock pot, a griddle, a pressure cooker. What else do we have? A coffee pot. You know, this is the way we're living.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks that are doing some of our renovations are folks that we know, and they're fellow believers. And so they said, hey, it would be okay if we came over early. This is before we had even started the project. Hey, would it be okay if we stopped by and just showed up 30 minutes earlier? And I responded back really quickly. I said, no problem. We're just cleaning up our house really fast, so you think we actually keep it this way, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And they laughed. And but that's one of the things that we mm-hmm. we are intentional as a family trying to say, hey, listen, do we indeed believe that God has given us a unique call? Do we believe that there are unique responsibilities and expectations that come with ministry? Absolutely. Do we need to embrace and steward that opportunity well? Do we need to be wise in every way? Yes. On the other hand, we have to fight against the notion in our own hearts, but we also need to communicate it to other people that, hey, listen, we're not above you. We're serving alongside you. And just as we see the parable, you know, or we see the picture of the shepherd and the sheep, there are times the shepherd leads out front. Sometimes the shepherd leads in the back, and sometimes the shepherd leads right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And our people need to see that.
And it's important as we, again, it all goes back to the gospel. And we want to see the gospel taken to the nations. And just this weekend, we at Shoreline, some folks came from Africa and kids from an orphanage in Africa. And so we're thinking about as I'm thinking through what those kids are going through, and now they're in America for a few months, and then they're going to go back, no electricity, you know, back
no
to
electricity within 30 miles
back away. back to what they consider normal, and they all seem very happy and all of that. But I'm thinking about, okay, what do I get worried and concerned about that really shouldn't have a place to worry and concern about. And while these kids are living the life they're living, and I had this conversation with my own children of, you know, think about what God has done and what you've been able to do in just your short period of time on this earth, and look at how other people around this world are living, and how can we impact? How can we create moments in our own lives where we're not being prideful, we're not worrying about things that don't matter, we're seeing the gospel move. And if we set these boundaries, if we're willing to call out areas in our own life and in our friend's life, then ultimately what that does is elevate the gospel. It doesn't elevate me because, well, I know what's best for you. No, it elevates the gospel. And when I have a conversation with you or another pastor, it's not about elevating you or that other pastor. It's elevating the gospel. And are we in a place where that is chief concern, or do we find ourselves going, how many more people will follow me?
Well, I love it cracks me up too. I, you know, I did have a conversation with your children. I'm glad they're all ready to head to Malawi.
They are.
Which is fantastic.
They're ready.
But why do we see that as such a valuable thing for our children? I mean, you hit all around it. I think there's also a side of it gives us perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And we're reminded that God's doing other things around the world. And we're reminded that not everything is in our little hub here in Knoxville. And in the same way, what happens when it comes to pride and when it comes to isolation, as you said, those things are intimately connected. If we're not careful, all we're doing is looking at ourselves.
Yep.
And we surround ourselves with people that are good with that. We surround ourselves with people that want to talk about us and brag on us mm-hmm. and say how great our sermon was. And here's the honest truth. Not every Sunday my sermon is good.
Right.
Not every time. I don't always lead as well as I could have. Mm-hmm. I don't always communicate something as effectively as I could have. But if we surround ourselves with people that are just constantly berating us with falsities, mm-hmm. maybe even with good intent, and we miss it. Man, miss it. We've got to keep a greater perspective, understand who our people are, understand who we are, not in light of the culture, but in light of the gospel, and man, it'll help us a bit.
Well, in sexual impurity, pride, isolation, all of those come from a selfish heart. And so we turn ourselves into little gods. It's idolatry. That's the issue. And so if we don't correct it there, and again, the gospel corrects that, but we have to recognize that, and then those other things will work themselves out. We'll be back. As we finish up the show, and we talk about today, what we've been looking at is, fall from a grace, not just with pastors, but lay people as well, that marriages have ended, you know, children have become orphans because their dad has stepped out and their mom has stepped out. And so as we think about that, let's start with Jason. How, from a pastor's perspective, what are some ways we can make sure we have the right things in place as best we can to make sure the gospel's elevated and not the person on the stage?
So what if we actually flip-flopped it a little bit? What if we did this? What if we thought about if we're the lay person?
Okay.
If we're one of the millions upon millions of lay people that are listening to this show right now, I'm sure. If you're one of those lay people, what can you be doing for your pastor?
Yes.
And then maybe if you're a pastor, what can you be doing to be mindful of your own heart? And so I think just from the perspective of a pastor, what would be great and what is helpful beyond measure is to see a body that really doesn't posture themselves in a way that seems to indicate, hey, if God's going to do something, it's going to happen through you, man. Mm-hmm. we need people that are bought into the mission and the vision of the church. We need people that are sold out to the gospel. We need people who say, indeed, I'm going to embrace that I have the gospel just as much as you have the gospel. I don't believe that the spiritual growth of my family or our church sits exclusively on your shoulders. Instead, I'm going to take on responsibility as a father, as a mother, as a Sunday school teacher, as a life group leader. People that just say, hey, listen, we are all a part of this. Mm-hmm. Because I think, again, very few leaders set themselves out and say, what I want to do is to be isolated.
Right.
What I want to do is be prideful. But unfortunately, when everyone continues to say, hey, man, here's a great example. Every time I go to a cookout somewhere, how come I'm the only one that can apparently pray?
Yeah, it's true.
And if you're not careful, you begin to think, I must be somebody.
And then you're offended if you're not asked.
And you're like, no, listen, man, I just want to eat the barbecue, man. You're a leader. You're a believer. Sure. You pray. And so we need people, we need lay leaders to embrace their responsibility. And I think what you'll see is a little bit of refuting some of that stuff that can creep into our hearts. What would you say if you've never been a lead pastor, but you've certainly been on a church staff. If you're just a pastor, one of the millions of pastors are listening today, what's your encouragement to them?
Yeah, what I would say is if you are saturated in the gospel, and if the gospel is your focus, then when you hear those words and it makes you go, I'm pretty good, you're going to recognize yourself going, oh, I'm pretty good, and that's, no, I'm not. I am sinful. I'm just as likely to fall into sin. There are certain, there are going to always be people in our that we come in contact with that we don't really get along with, even in the Christian circles. That we may not want to hang out with.
Like you and I.
Exactly.
I
mean,
you come down the road and like, no.
We talk once a week. and so as we do those things, I think it's important that we, and it sounds cliche, but we have to keep the focus on the gospel.
That's right.
And so even in my role at Hope, I have some people that have told me, look, people donate to other people, not to organizations. Your picture should be on everything. And I'm like, that is a terrible idea.
Correct.
Maybe that is a true model that works. Maybe it does. But if we turn our organizations into us,
right.
What happens if I die tonight?
Right.
What happens if something terrible happens or somebody falls from grace? Then the organization now is about me, not about the main thing, which is the gospel.
Yeah, I say every time when I talk to families that, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, you know, anytime I meet with a couple who wants to do premarital counseling, I'm like, listen, we can talk about finances, mm-hmm. we can talk about intimacy, we can talk about communication and family and all that other jazz, but I'm just going to tell you to start with you pursue Jesus,
yep.
and a whole lot of this stuff, if both of you are pursuing Jesus, a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it, is going to be resolved in the same way. We've just got to have pastors that say, I'm not going to just tell people about Jesus, but I'm going to know and walk with Jesus intimately.
Well, in the church of our Jesus, our Lord and Savior, has dealt with a lot of things over the years. And it's going to be able to maintain and sustain because of who Jesus is.
That's right.
When a pastor falls.
That's right.
Why? Because that's why we need Jesus. Jesus went to the cross knowing these
Correct.
Pastors were going to have these failures.
In fact, and we'll conclude with this, but see, the truth is that when someone falls, it doesn't invalidate the
Absolutely.
Church. In fact, what it does is it only validates the gospel all the more and the reason that we do church, because that's why Jesus came. He didn't come for the perfect. He didn't come for the righteous. He came for the imperfect and the unrighteous. And I'll testify today. I'm
yep.
one of those folks.
Yep. That'll preach, Jason.
Yeah, man.
We'll talk next week.